one of the verses just hit me and really convicted me. And it's one of the verses says, "She does him good and not harm all the days of her life." And I just realized that my attitude towards his time management and sometimes even the church was doing him harm. That was a turning point for me. And it also helped me let go of some resentment that I had.
Everybody, today on the show we have Ben and Lindsay Skipper. He is the senior pastor at Carterville Baptist Church in Petal, Mississippi. And I actually met Ben through my work at Visioneering and thought they would be an interesting interview. He has a ton of energy. He has a lot of spunk. I mean, it was a fun interview. And we got to meet Lindsay through this process, and she was his match. And
absolutely. What I love about this interview is I love how humble he is about time management. Like, sometimes you meet people and they're like, this is the way you got to do it. Mm-hmm. And as a pastor, flexibility is the key. Mm-hmm. And I think he came across as someone who really wants to manage his time well, but it's a struggle.
Yeah. Well, and the thing about this episode is that there's a second one with a different pastor in a few weeks. But we wanted to get some different pastors from different contexts of how they manage their time. And so he talks about in the interview, his church is around 500.
Right.
I don't remember him saying if he had an admin or not, but he pretty much has to manage his own time and has a lot of necessary things that he has to do at hospitals and all that sort of stuff.
And is not by nature good with time, and his wife is.
Yeah.
Which creates some conflict in the home, which is very typical for pastors. So I just thought this was really helpful. I think it'd be cool for us to share a little bit of our journey with time management, because I'm a lot like him. You're mm-hmm. a lot like her. Mm-hmm. And some things we learned along the way that were helpful.
Yeah.
So for example, one of the things was, when I was a pastor, every Saturday morning, almost without exception, we would get up and we would do the calendar game.
Well, but hang on. That was when you were a pastor at Storyline.
Okay.
And you didn't have
the second church.
You didn't have an admin or any sort of assistance. And so I kind of served in that role for you. You had a great one at Inglewood, and that's when our kids were really little. And so she was a super helpful to us in that season. And that's one of the things I was going to say, is that I think the thing that we have done really well over all the years, even though I'm super structured and like my time managed well, we've been really flexible, because different seasons call for different needs. And I mean, even different seasons within a year. I mean, you know, you have different sports seasons. It's going to be different on your schedule than, off seasons. And so, but yes, when you were at Storyline, we woke up every Saturday morning and really worked through, like, here's what you have to get done, put the big rocks on the calendar, and then filled it in with other stuff.
This was all based on marriage advice. We heard about three forms of communication in marriage. Proactive communication is the best form, where you're talking about something before it happens. Reactive is not great, because something's already happened and you're responding. And then there's radioactive, which is certain topics that as soon as they come up, they almost always end up in pretty sharp conflict. We found that the more proactive mm-hmm. we could be about calendaring, the less conflict we had.
Well, in both of the couples we interviewed, they talked about this, because if pastors don't get the sermons done, which is a big rock, then the weekend is they're distracted over the weekend, and then the family pays a price for it.
Yep.
So that was the thing, and we realized that early on, because you were a pastor when our kids were babies, and we had to figure this out. And so we, you know, talk about that. Your structure was so different than both of the pastors we interviewed, because your creativity comes in the morning. And so we blocked out every morning for you until lunchtime. And then you met with people every afternoon, except, of course, like when you had a staff meeting on Wednesday mornings, that thing. But you talked about that one time, like you had to say a statement for it.
W.A. Criswell just said, "I give my mornings to God, my afternoons to people." That was the way he broke up his time. That's really hard to do. Like, when we were in our church planting mode, if somebody wanted to see me, who is a key leader of the church at that season, mm-hmm. I would interrupt that time, of course.
Yeah.
Because I had to prioritize and do triage. But for the most part, my greatest mistake in planning my time was I almost always thought that someone who needed to see me as soon as possible.
Yeah. Steve Cuss talks about this. Oh, I said that funny.
It's really
Steve
true.
Steve Cuss, because he talked about how people will call you and say, we have got to meet with you today. Our marriage is in an emergency situation.
Right.
And he says to them, it didn't get there overnight. So you're gonna have to wait a couple of days till I can
right.
fit it in my schedule. He doesn't say it rudely like that, but.
But as a pastor, it feels selfish to say, no, I need to put extra polish on the sermon when someone's marriage is crumbling. But in almost no instances, in fact, none that I can think of, was the meeting with me the thing that changed the deal. It was all going south till they met with me.
Yeah.
So I would encourage pastors to be a little more guarded about their priority of preaching and preparing.
I would say, too, when in talking about flexibility, the thing is, too, when you were at Inglewood and a younger preacher, it took you, I mean, almost 15-ish hours a week to do your sermon the way you wanted to prepare it. And then when you got to Storyline, you realized that you didn't need that many hours. You needed 8 to 10, which was easier than you had more time. So, I mean, I do think as people grow and mature and understand yeah. their rhythm of preaching, you can do it faster.
Well, and some of that was the advancements of technology. When Logos Bible software came along and I could have all my commentaries on my computer, that saved me trips to the library. It saved me shopping for books. Mm-hmm. I just got faster at it. Just like somebody who, you know, writes songs, the longer they write songs, they write them faster. And I think it's good as you get older to not have to devote as much time to sermon prep. I talked to Steve Gaines about this not long ago, and he said he used to spend an enormous amount of time preparing his sermon, and now he spends more time preparing his heart, which I thought was an interesting way to think about it.
Do you have any facts to back up that a songwriter is faster the older they get?
No, I just said that because it sounded true.
I'm like, well, I got stuck on that. I mean, yeah. I'm sure that quote from Steve was good, well, but I'm like, that's not true.
You know, I've written a few good songs, Lindley.
You wrote me one
yeah.
to propose to me.
I did write you a song.
Yeah.
Took me a long time. All right. Last thing I would say about time management is lots of people like to give pastors advice about how to use their time, and they're normally people who have never been pastors. So until you've been in the seat and you know the pressure of shepherding people, you know, I always try to be a little bit careful to not compare my life to someone who is in an executive world. Like my world at Lifeway is a lot more scheduled, easy to schedule than when I was a pastor. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of it, pastors just need to give yourselves grace. I mean, life is made up of interruptions, and there is very few weeks that go the way we plan. Well, okay, we've talked enough. Let's jump right into this episode with the Skippers. Welcome to the Glass House. We have new friends today. Lindley, this is a connection of yours.
Yeah, so I met Ben Skipper through work at Visioneering, and we just talked a little bit when we had a first work call. And I remember I came home and told Ben, I said, he's very passionate about his church. I just loved that he loves his church, clearly. Loves his staff. And so when we were talking about doing an episode with how do different pastors slice up their time and do their week, I said, I would love to interview Ben and his wife, Lindsay, and just hear from them. I mean, they're in a town called Petal, Mississippi. Tell us about Petal and tell us about you guys a little bit.
Okay, so I've been in Petal for 23 years. Lindsay's been in Petal for her entire life. So one of the things that's super unique for our setting is like, this is her home church.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I think that's fun in our story.
Yes.
Petal is a suburb to Hattiesburg, Mississippi. So it's, I don't know, there's 12,000 people in the zip code, 22,000 people. For our standards in Mississippi, I mean, it's a good school district, a good town. For the rest of the world, it probably seems really small, but we love it. Great place to be.
That's great.
Well, thank you guys for sharing on this very practical topic. I was in seminary once, and the professor was a pastor. And I remember him saying, let me tell you guys how I slice up my week. And I just remember it being one of the most interesting discussions because it was so radically different than how I would have sliced up my week. And I think no two pastors do this the same. No two pastor families do this the same. So, Ben, like, let's just start with you. Like, what does a typical week look like for you? Sermon prep, staff meetings, hospital visitation. Is there a typical week?
No, that's my first response, Ben, is I don't feel like there ever is a typical week. I'm going to do my best. In fact, I work to narrate this out some. And what was more helpful to me than the typical week that I'm going to give you is just, first of all, a big reminder that, man, in our setting, weeks, I don't really have typical weeks. It's like our church, we have about 500 people on a Sunday. So we're big enough that we've got a lot of administrative stuff, but still small enough that I think everybody has my cell phone number.
Yeah.
And so an awful lot of days where I think I've got these big blocks of time, somebody comes in the middle of a crisis and I want to spend in, you know, there was a Wednesday not that long ago where about 4 hours of the day were totally unbudgeted, but they were such priority ministry things for me. You know, somebody whose husband was just somebody from our recovery ministry, husband just got taken to jail, man, I'm going to hear her out. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to meet with her and pray with her. Spent the afternoon going to jail to try to connect with her husband. Those things weren't on my radar at all.
Yeah.
But in our setting, like I'm accessible for those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So while I think a lot of my weeks can feel predictable when they start,
right,
they get super all right. So here's some guiding rules for me.
Okay.
And then I'll give you the, so first of all, I've learned who I am and I know that I'm not going to work super well in the most rigid structured schedule in the world. Like what would work for her super well is not going to work for me.
Yep.
She's extremely disciplined. I'm very energetic. So she's reading books about, you know, I mean, she's reading Atomic Habits and all kinds of books about just how to build the best life. She hands them to me. You should read this. You should. She's saying, you're messed up. Read this book.
Yeah.
I'll read the book and I'll smile. I'm like, Lynn, this won't work for me. Like we are just so different.
Right.
So I've learned who I am and how to manage me as an energetic but ADHD guy. Welcoming people and building people into the week, being able to sort of ride the wave towards productivity, I hope sometimes. So a couple of things that I guess are more guiding lights for me than a typical week is I want my ministry to have some semblance of what Jesus did. And I'm sure that Jesus had a plan when he went to villages. And I realize that as omniscient, like he knows what's going to happen. But for Jesus, like he was interrupted by people. And I don't want people to be an interruption to me, right? He was always welcome that. He saw people, touched people. And there are moments where I feel overwhelmed by administrative load or, hey, I've got to finish policy and procedure manual things, or I've got to send some emails or get some committees ready, or I've got to work on the next teaching prep. And somebody comes in, maybe a staff member, maybe a deacon, maybe somebody who's grieving. And I never want that to feel like they interrupted my
All right, let me stop you right there. So
yes.
I'm you and Lindsay and Lindley are the same. So the only challenge with this is it's Thursday, Friday. I still don't have my sermon done. And Lindley's looking at me like, we have plans this weekend, Ben. Like, when are you going to get the sermon done? Like, is that a Lindsay? Lindsay, talk to us.
That never happens at our house.
How do you manage Ben's scatterbrained ways, but it works for him?
I think as he's gotten older, he's done a better job. Fridays, normally he has off. Now, a lot of times that Friday might be, oh, we had a funeral today, or, oh, you know, he had to run into the hospital to see somebody because of an emergency or whatever. But a lot of times he can use Friday as kind of like a catch-up day for sermon prep. But there are some times on Saturday late-ish that I look up and he's studying. And our kids are old enough now that, you know, yeah. Mm-hmm. We can kind of make a quiet time for dad for that to happen. But that definitely was harder when our kids were younger, you know, when the kids are running around and
yeah,
it's kind of crazy. And sometimes he would just come back up to the church to get some quiet time and do some sermon prep.
Yeah.
But I feel like as he's gotten older and more focused, he is doing better at that.
That's good.
So I think we've also sort of learned our family rhythms. Like I feel like I know how to look at our family rhythm and say, hey, this is sacred. Don't mess with this. Like there's something going on in our family that I feel like, hey, this is connective. It's high priority. And I kind of know when those things are. And I also know when, hey, the boys want some time alone or they're doing schoolwork. I've sort of learned to recognize in our family rhythms when I have permission to step back and engage something for church, and when I don't need to, when I need to prioritize family, kids. I think that's become more obvious to me.
It's good.
How old are your kids now?
We have three boys and they are 13, 15, and 17.
Okay.
They're all in the youth group. It's a hoot.
Yeah.
I bet that's really fun. We left church or pastoral ministry when our boys were in middle school. So they're not in the high school youth group
right.
Under dad's leadership.
Well, getting back to the time thing, Ben, say a little bit more about what day is your staff meeting and how much time do you spend one-on-one with staff and all that?
So I sketched out a week for you because you asked. Okay. And I thought, all right, what would it look like? So I said, Monday is mostly like reflection and connection. It's coming out of a Sunday with the overflow in your brain, right? Who was a guest yesterday? Who was struggling yesterday when I saw them? I need to check on some people. What staff members do I need to go and sit down with today to say, hey, man, I heard what you said. How can I help you with that? How are you? So Monday I come in, and sometimes I'm reflecting on the sermon. Hey, I like what I taught, but if I ever teach that again, I'm going to teach it differently.
Right.
Or I've never considered this. And so Monday, I'm sort of unpacking spiritually and in biblical content, unpacking my brain, and I'm connecting with our staff, our church people, following up with guests. We're doing whatever we need to do there. Tuesday, that's mostly administrative. That staff meeting in the morning. We have so I kind of just block Tuesday out for staff. And then if somebody wants to go grab lunch out of the staff, that's always a good option. Tuesday afternoons are hospital visits for me, and then all the margins, or if the hospitals are empty or we don't have a lot of folks that need my attention, that gives me extra time to build in administrative work for anything, you know, whatever projects we're working on. And right now there seems like there's a ton of those. There's always plenty of that stuff to plug in. You just open your journal and see what's next on the list and stick it in those spots. And those to me get the open windows typically for me. People and biblical content get the priority windows, and those get the windows that become open during the week.
Okay.
So then Wednesdays are mostly like prep for me, and we have Wednesday night church together. So Wednesday night is a good flex day that I can do a lot of those kinds of things or teach for the preps that are coming up. Thursday morning, kind of fun for me. I have a senior adult Bible study. It's a great way for me to stay connected to the matriarchs and patriarchs of our congregation. And also a lot of next year's sermons come out of this really neat Bible study environment we have on Thursday mornings. So I usually try to first thing Thursday morning, meet with somebody. Today it's you guys. but sometimes I can meet somebody for breakfast or coffee and then do my prep for the Thursday Bible study, engage my senior adults. And I'm back to the hospitals on Thursday. I have Tuesday and Thursday. I give the other days to other staff members. So that's, and then Thursday wind down is mostly sermon prep or whatever was the most important thing that didn't get my attention earlier in the week. That's kind of the shell of what I like in my week to look like.
How many services on Sunday do you have?
We have one service, but like, hey, I teach Sunday school. So like on, so in 2 weeks, I'll have a deacon's meeting. I teach Sunday school. Then I preach. And a lot of times we'll use Sunday lunch as a kind of a priority time for meetings. Like we have several task forces that are working on special projects for some of our committees. The best time for them to meet is we bring lunch in or prep a lunch and have a lunch meeting right after church. One of the things that's in our community, I think, that's pretty distinct is like we're super busy. Our community is built around the school system, and so we have a lot of families with kids that are in so many extracurriculars. Sunday afternoon kind of becomes a good time for that.
Lindsay, I want to turn it to you just a little bit. For the listener and the pastor's wife listening, do you work on staff for the church?
I do not. I have in the past. I've kind of won many roles here. As Ben said, this is my home church. I grew up in this church, so that's kind of unique. But I have served as our weekday preschool director for almost 10 years. And then I've also served as children's minister for a short time. I currently don't work on staff. And I teach piano lessons a couple days a week and have some other little things that I do. But we homeschool, so I homeschool our boys. But I do feel like I'm up here a lot. I feel like, you know, I will say though, I don't feel a lot of pressure from our church family, as far as expectations.
Nice.
Me go. I don't know, maybe if that's because I grew up here and I've always just kind of been involved, you know, so, but I do get to plug into some ministries that mean a lot to me. I volunteer in our youth, department and lead a small group there. I also, serve on our mission team because that means a lot to me. And we do teach a Bible study group on Sunday mornings. And so we get to minister to that group of adults. So, but I don't feel a lot of pressure, you know, that a lot of pastors' wives feel. to do certain things.
No, I wonder if this is more common than we think. So you're at the church that you grew up in. So surely so many of the senior adults, you know, are like, oh, I raised you in the preschool or something. Do they still respect you as their, you know, pastor's wife, just because they've known you? They may have known anything that you went through, teenage years, anything like that. I mean, what's that like?
I have an answer. I can't wait to hear
okay, yours. Okay. I feel like they do. My family grew up in the church, and our church is a really unique situation. Our the pastor that was here before Ben was here for 45 years. So he was the only pastor I ever knew. And then Ben started here as youth minister, and then he was associate pastor, and then became the lead pastor. So I feel like I've just been here, and just it's kind of been like this one transition after another. And so I feel like they respect me, and we love them, you know, and they love me. So what's your answer?
First of all, I think your role, like as pastor's wife in the church you grew up in, is probably more interesting than how I manage a week. But that's another podcast for okay. another day. I think the church really does like less. I see less like pressure and expectation. I mean, we still live in the fishbowl that everybody else does, but really, I don't think that our church folks are putting a lot of extra pressure on Lindsay or have a lot of expectations. Now, some of that's because she's fantastic and she probably exceeds expectations automatically. Like Lindley, that Facebook post yesterday for her birthday, uh-huh. tons of those comments were from church members who think the world.
That's sweet.
And so I think that our church values your voice. Like I think in the years that they've had to watch you, like they've seen your authenticity and they know that you love Jesus. They're super proud of you. And I think like when Lindsay speaks, people at church, like funny story for us, like our pastoral transition was really unique, very unique. Another story for another day. But when it was really wrapping up, the committee interviewed me one night and I had my interview and man, I was emotionally thin. I was worn out and tired. It was a good interview. It was fine. But I didn't have a lot left. The next night they interviewed Lindsay. I don't know if that's common or not, but it was our story. They interviewed Lindsay. Lindsay's interview was 1,000 times better than
hers.
And I think it's a good reflection of who she is and who she is to this church.
That's great.
Like I love this church and I think they love me, but I tell you, they really love Lindsay and for good reason.
In one of our earliest episodes, Paul Tripp said something that's really stuck with me. He said that fruitfulness is the result of longevity. And, you know, since we're talking about time here, it's interesting your guys' story about how you relationally, there's compound interest. You know, the longer you stay at a place, the more time people get to know you, the more trust is established. Like, that's really an interesting dynamic you guys have in terms of the length of time you've known these people, which is really a blessing. Well, going to the time thing, what's the hardest thing for you, Ben? It sounds like you're very relational. You're very hands-on. You're very responsive. My guess would be, like, getting focus time? Like, what is that? What's the hardest thing for you?
Yes, I constantly feel like I'm not as efficient as I'd like to be. In fact, for our staff meeting for the last 2 years and in a group of guys that I pray with on Mondays, sir, my consistent prayer request is I'm just on the downhill side of midlife right now. I've got half of my life left to use. I want to be good at what I'm good at, but I want to get better at what I'm not great at. And I've been praying for administrative long-term focus and follow through that just I'm even through the gifting of the Spirit, as well as through discipline that God would allow me to serve better in some of the things I'm weak in. And that's it. I constantly feel like, hey, did I manage this week well? Did I let distractions that weren't necessary? And I don't mean people, because I've already told you those aren't interruptions to me. But did I let rabbit trails and personal distractions take from my pastoral ministry today? Like one of the cues you guys sent us for prep was, what would you tell a seminary student if they were just hitting the church field? When I reflected on that, one of the things that I would tell them is that they've got to take it seriously, because nobody tells you how important managing your time is going to be. But you're going to have to do it. And you're going to have to do it for yourself. Like in ministry, in most people's setting, there's not somebody else coming in to tell them how to manage their day. They're going to have to choose that for themselves. And if you struggle a little bit in that area. And I think I certainly do. You're going to have this like kind of slow drip in the back of your mind of, did I get enough done? Did I do enough? Man, I can't tell you how many days I've gone home and felt just frustrated at myself because I know that I missed some opportunities to wrap up projects that I needed to wrap up. And then evaluating, okay, did I make the right choices? Did I not? So I think you have to give yourself some grace, but I also think you really have to work hard.
Okay, I have a marriage question about this because you two are similar to us two as far as details, and it sounds like time management. And so we have finally, you know, as we get older, have come to a more peaceful place in this. But when you're younger, it was really hard on me because I would say, you know, Ben, you've got to like do your sermon prep so that you create margin for people and all those things. But like you, Ben Skipper, he's like, I can't follow a weekly schedule. I'll just kind of die inside by having to do this. I mean, did you guys fight over this? Like for the young couple listening and the young woman who's like, he's not getting this done. What do I do? What do I say? How did you guys handle that?
So I think probably a turning point for me in this struggle. And for me, it wasn't so much, because I think at this time you weren't actually the pastor, but he was the associate pastor. But there were just a lot of little things that kept pulling him away from home, sometimes late at night or whatever. I was studying Proverbs 31 with a group of ladies, and one of the verses just hit me and really convicted me. And it's one of the verses says, she does him good and not harm all the days of her life. And I just realized that my attitude towards his time management and sometimes even the church was doing him harm. And it was something I had to come to grips with. And obviously, there's room for boundaries, right? I mean, like if he's gone every night and never sees the kids and we don't, you know, have time to work on our marriage, there's need for boundaries, you know. But that verse really convicted me of not doing him harm with my attitude and with the words I used to say, hey, you need to do this instead of whatever, you know. That was a turning point for me. And it also helped me let go of some resentment that I had towards the church at that time for feeling like, well, I'm home all day with these kids and he's never here, you know. And that was obviously something we had chosen for our family, was for me to be home with our kids. So just to be able to let go of some of that, God really used that as a turning point in my life. And also to say, like, hey, he's a big boy. Like, he's got to make these yeah. time management decisions for himself, you know. Because me standing over, like, I think Ben just said, or maybe you said, that he would die inside, you know, if he had to follow this schedule, which to me, a schedule is like, yes, let's go, uh-huh. you know. So just stepping back and saying, okay, well, you've got to make this decision for yourself, too. So
yeah, that's good.
And on the other side of that, like, to not abuse that. Like, I that was the best week of my life when she – I physically felt she's going to do me good, not harm me every day of my life. Like I said, hey, what's going on? And she told me, because it was great. Like, great. Well, I intentionally don't abuse that either. Mm-hmm. Like I try to be very engaged at home. And I mean, I don't think there's any room for somebody to use your calling to ministry as a cover for your workaholism. On the one hand, this is a calling. It's not a 40-hour-a-week job. And I would tell every seminary student going into ministry to remember that. Like, embrace it, enjoy it, love that it's a calling, hold it sacred. And it's going to take more than 40 hours a week, most every week. But don't use it as a cheap cover for workaholism or for a broken self-identity that's trying to find meaning in work and authority. Like, so I think on the backside of God dealing with Lindsay and kind of showing her that, that's what he's showing me too, is that I want to be super committed to this church and I love this church, but I want to be serving Jesus and not serving me. And some of my decisions for where I put my time or how I invested my pastoral calendar were probably really just me being a workaholic so that I'd feel better about myself. Mm.
I so resonate with you guys' story. We've worked through this. I mean, on my fleshy days, I would say things like, I'm a grown man. I can figure this out. Like, I would be tense with you and mm-hmm. say, like, hey, let me do this the way I want to do it. On my spirit-filled days, I would say, hey, let me know what's causing you anxiety? Because a lot of times there was like a legit thing that Lenny was concerned about. Like, look, we've got this big event this weekend with our family, and I just don't want you to be emotionally vacant because you didn't get the sermon down because you said yes to three people who wanted to walk into your office. Mm-hmm. So you're right. I think it's a constant discussion back and forth that requires lots of good communication.
For sure.
So if you guys were listening to, if some young people out there were listening, just getting started in ministry, pastor's wife, pastor, it's their first church. Mm-hmm. It's a smaller church. So same kind of expectations in terms of everybody wants pastor's cell phone. What would be some general principles that you just try to give them in terms of like, here's how to not just survive, but thrive?
So for me, I would say find a mentor, a wise pastor that you trust, who gets you, who cares about you, and check in regularly, especially around your emotional maturity, your self-identity and self-esteem. You know, if you're taking on this superhero God complex and you think you are the savior of the church, you're going to manage your calendar that way. You're going to take that baggage home and you're going to be making it.
That's good.
That's different. That is different to me than somebody saying, hey, I was called to this. I'm going to sacrifice for it. I'll do whatever it takes. Both scenarios require lots of time. Both scenarios might put you at a 50-hour or 60-hour week, but they do it totally differently. In my personal opinion. And so my first thing would be there's no book on it that I could recommend. You might have read it. There's no book on it that I could recommend. There's no seminary classroom, like the slides on those pastoral ministry boards that are telling you how to do your sermon prep starting Monday morning at 8:00. They don't work for the ADHD guy. Like, nobody's teaching that stuff to me in seminary. Had some great professors. I don't mean that as slight to my seminary. I loved it. But I would say find somebody, a person, a mentor who can walk with you through this, and especially with a keen eye towards your commitment in light of your self-identity and your emotional maturity. Make sure you're not just using this as a smokescreen. You do need a high commitment. It is a calling. But don't let that be an excuse for bad behavior, bad thinking, or for a guy not believing the gospel and leading into it, trying to create a self-righteousness, a works-based proving of your faith. That would be my advice. What's yours?
I think I would say to have some boundaries, because I don't think we did that very well when we were first starting off in ministry, as far as like time management boundaries. But then also you've got to be flexible, right? Because like if, you know, a family in the church loses a loved one and we just sat down for dinner, I would look at him and say, you should go do that, you know? So I think just it's kind of the two working together. We kind of laughed on our mission trip last week because we were like, blessed are the flexible because they won't break. You know, we were joking because we had some things that came up. And so, you know, add that little beatitude in there. So I really like have some boundaries, but then also as a wife, you know, do him good and not harm, and realize that there are some times when he's going to have to say, hey, I've really got to go do this. So
I think there's one more thing that I would offer. And that's this, like C.S. Lewis said that the mother of all sin is pride. And I found that true in marriage, in ministry, in every other way, that what's broken most of the time deep down is our pride, creating all kind of messes. So when we were unhealthy in our pride, we can't have these conversations at home. Like in that newlywed phase, especially, we both came into it defensive and uncorrectable. And, you know, sometimes our boundary setting was really territorialism more than it was for the good of our home and our marriage. So I would encourage all of us, like ministers are not exempt from pride. In fact, sometimes our platform gifting or our leadership calling sort of accelerates pride in some ways. It can be. So I would say guard your pride, because all of these things can be worked out at home. Like we can handle them in healthy ways. We can have the conversations. If we've died to ourselves and our pride is in a good place. But if we're so hypersensitive that we can't have the conversation, I'm too defensive, or I'm pulling the, hey, I'm the pastor card, or she feels abandoned, we can't even talk this out at home. And so, you know, Dave Ramsey, sometimes when he's talking about money with people, he'll say, hey, you don't have a money problem. You have a marriage problem. You can't even talk. Well, I would say almost the same thing here, to kind of borrow that mindset. For some of us, it's not a calendaring problem. It's a pride problem. We can't
we can't work it out in our marriage because we're too defensive or touchy to be able to represent ourselves.
So true.
We got just a couple of minutes left here, so I want to give you guys just a couple of rapid-fire questions.
All right.
Ben, do you often attend meetings not because you add value, but because you need to be seen at the meeting?
Yes.
And do you hesitate
and act like I had to think that one out? Yes.
Have you figured out a way to be seen, to say a couple words and step out, or do you normally sit through the entire meeting?
For meetings, not often. But yes, recently I've had to do that. We're kind of in a season where I think I'm having to grow some. Your podcast listeners still want all the details for what's happening at the church, but we just got enough administratively going on that I recognize, hey, it's impossible.
Yeah.
This won't work. You have to adjust. Mm-hmm. So yes.
I'm learning that often to step into a meeting, to just bless the meeting. Thank you guys for being a part of this. This is an important thing we're doing. Offer a prayer.
Yeah.
That's important, but sometimes that's all you got to do.
Yeah, that's right. And if you think, I think early phases of that, whoever you've asked to lead the meeting, you prep them with your 2 cents and your thoughts, and you debrief the next morning to find out what you missed. Mm-hmm. You also have to have some trust in your team, who's going to lead that meeting. But absolutely, I've learned to do that a little bit. And it almost, especially when I was more in my flesh, it almost hurt my feelings if I would present that like it was some big deal. And then that team that's having the meeting looks at you and says, okay. It almost kind of hurts you. You think, wait a minute. No, 100%.
That's good. Yeah, second question. What slot during the week are you guys both very tired and most susceptible to fighting? Is that Sunday afternoon and night? Is it Monday? Like what's the time that you have to be careful?
Thursday evening.
Huh. Interesting. Thursday evening?
So our church gives all of our full-time ministry staff a day off. Knowing that you're going to work Sunday and we work, after hours, my day off, if I can have it, is Friday. Sometimes a wedding or a funeral or a crisis takes that away. But by this particular Thursday, right, I spoke at our Celebrate Recovery Sunday night. Lindsay was coming on from mission trip. So Monday night I had the boys. Tuesday night I had a meeting. Wednesday night we had the church family picnic. Thursday night I have a meeting. And so when I get home tonight, I will have I'm coming in on fumes and I know. Yeah. And she's tired. And so Thursday afternoon, you're lying to yourself if you don't recognize that you're emotionally thin and you need to recharge. Mm-hmm. And tomorrow morning, if I have a few minutes alone with Jesus on my back patio, that's going to be so good for me.
That's interesting. It's Thursday night. For Lindley and I, it was always Sunday afternoon, like after church, like we were just so exhausted from the morning. And you're teaching Sunday school on top of that, bro. Like it's just a lot. Sunday's heavy.
Yeah, but it's also I also feel like I'm directly wired into my gifts on Sunday, like the teaching and the preaching and the people.
Yeah.
A lot of the administration and work and administrative work during the week, I think I'm having to work harder in some ways than Sunday. Sunday is emotionally draining, but it just kind of comes naturally in some ways to me.
Lindsay, you have any comment on that?
I agree with him on that. Yeah, I think... he calls on Sundays, he calls his ADHD his superpower because it helps him do all the
bounce
things.
All over the room.
he gets to use his superpower on Sunday. And I think the hardest thing for him during the week is the meetings and the emails and the,
And I want to, and I feel like I really, I know that I can do that well and I'm going to do that well. It just takes a lot of extra attention for me to do that.
Ben, how do you think you would function if God quadrupled the size of your church in 2 years? What would you do if you couldn't give your cell phone number out to the rest of the church?
Hey, I'll be honest with you, Ben. I think we're already thinking through some of those. Yeah. Not in any formal ways. God has been super kind to us. He's led us through a lot of things here that we had no vision or foresight on. And I think he's already doing that now. I think the church growth we're experiencing, but also the projects that are important to us right now, we're already outgrowing me in some ways. And so I'm already learning, to respect our team and kind of grieve. I know this sounds really weird, but to grieve that I'm not going to know everybody in the church very soon.
I understand.
We're already there. Yep. And so, you're kind of prepping a question that's like, hey, Ben, do you know you're going to have to change? Yes, absolutely, I do. And 2 years from now, I'll tell you what those changes looked like. But I already sense kind of the beginning of, hey, I don't know that person, or they're going to call this staff member instead of me, most likely, if they need something. And I love it. That's great. Mm, it's terrific. That's good. You know, we're already having meetings where I'm not leading them. I'm already giving some of our administrative committees to other staff members to be the direct leader for those groups. And that's not so much great planning on my part as it is, we're just in a season where I knew it wouldn't work any other way. But I think it's going to be great preparation for the future for us.
Hmm. All right. This last question, it's an easy one. Are you good at managing the time that you preach?
Yes. I say that I am. What would you say?
I think he is. There are some Sundays when I'm like, well, you talked for 5 minutes before you got to the passage or whatever. And a friend of ours, so just for all you pastors out there, a friend of ours told us this advice several years ago.
Shout out to Anthony McCullough.
Yeah, so he says, preach strong, not long. So it's for all you pastors out
it's
there.
So true.
Strong, amen to that.
It's so true. Lifeway Research just did a research project and surveyed pastors on how long they think they preach, and then surveyed the congregation on how long the pastor preaches, and they were not the same estimations.
Oh, definitely.
It's 35 minutes. Like, and that's when I say yes, I'm aware, it's because I'm not telling myself I preach 27 minutes or 26 minutes. Like it's 35 minutes. I'm there's a clock on the back of the wall, and I am keenly aware of it. It sits on me like a 100-pound weight.
That's good, though.
Guys, this is such a great interview. Thanks for giving us a little of your time this morning, and I hope it doesn't exhaust you in your Thursday night exhaustion.
No way. We're good.
All right. Well, great to meet you guys.
Thanks for having us. You guys are a breath of fresh air. I'm super proud of your leadership. Both of you, you're doing great things. It means the world that you let us join you for a little while.
The Glass House is executive produced by Angie Elkins, edited and engineered by Donnie Gordon with help from Nathan Howard, show notes and production help from Nikki Ogden, photography by Emily Bergeron and Bailey Watley, recorded at the Lifeway Podcast Studio in Brentwood, Tennessee.